stretch out, but your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Under the cover of my skin,
welcome to episode number 112 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thanks for joining us for another week. Big show coming up. Say it nearly every week, but this show is a big show because we've got some things to celebrate. Welcome to my co-host. Was in Moama this morning, now in Canberra. Bradley Croker, how you going?
Yeah, not too bad. A little bit tired. You didn't even get out of bed to say goodbye to me this morning.
It was very dusty this morning. Yeah, I just apologised off air for that. Said I'd drop your car because we had to leave a car sleeping somewhere overnight. But yeah, Carly thankfully stepped up and took you to your car this morning about 6:30 a.m.
Yeah, it was like mad. It was like Mad Monday yesterday for our Inside Running Podcast Frothers Steigen team.
Silly Sunday, yep. Arvo. Everyone was singing some beers.
Did you boys have some? Have too many?
Not quite. Just at that stage where it was fun. Maybe not enough sleep. That was all.
And just at that stage where Croker got a little bit lippy, a little bit in your face.
Oh, no, it was good. I can't wait to tell you stories about our night, actually, because we went out thinking we'd got rolled by one point, and then we went out for dinner, and like we just got some bad vibes that I think we weren't going to win the Steigen hashtag 1 point score team section. And then, yeah, we're sitting at dinner, and the news come through. We both jumped out of our seats, clapping, high-fiving each other. All these other people in the restaurant are like, what the heck are these two guys talking about? And then we just started sinking beers quick. Brad started sculling them. We had a tab.
Brady had told Carly, we'll just go for dinner and have one beer. We're home by 9 o'clock for the 9 o'clock feed. That didn't happen.
Did not happen at all. Things were getting a bit loose in Moama. Anyway, Julian Spence, how are you going in Ballarat?
I'm good, mate. That's good.
That's good. You're busy this time of year, wouldn't you? Selling Christmas stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're flat knacker. First 2 weeks of December, pretty shit. Second 2 weeks, nightmare.
Everyone picks
like,
up.
Not a nightmare. I like it. It's actually not a nightmare. It's a dream, but a bit of work on. A lot of people through. A lot of, end of year stuff, social events, that kind of shit you got to deal with.
Yeah. Usually it's pretty good. I don't know about it being shit. I like this time of the year.
I hate Christmas, though. I've already said that. You guys know that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not religious in the slightest, so I hate that there's this, like when my life is structured around religion, that just, like, I don't like it.
Yeah, but surely, like, as a small, it's only a small percent of people that celebrate Christmas for the religious reasons. You should be loving it for the consumer kind of side of things.
But it's like, it's a little bit of what's your integrity like when you're celebrating a holiday you don't believe in?
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have trouble with that. Plays on my mind a bit.
I went to see you down at Mass on, Wednesday morning?
Well, we're in Ballarat, right? You know what's happened in Ballarat. The church isn't a well-liked place down here.
Yeah, some bad history there.
There's some bad shit that the church has done in this town. And I don't like to, celebrate it.
Yep, religious stats of the week are back. Love this one. Tell us,
we go through all the fucking criminal cases going through at the moment about it.
Yeah. Not good. Tell us what you've been doing running-wise, though. Come back from the States.
Yeah, this was a good week for me, actually. I think I'm back. Today confirmed it. Dropped Watto. He was 42K into his long run, and I joined him, and then we dropped him up the hill, so I felt pretty good about that.
You dropped someone on an easy run, did you?
He was 3 hours into his long run, and we went up a hill, and he fell back, and I'm like, you beauty, I'm going to smash him tonight. 50K he ran.
That's this week. Tell me about last week.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that next week again. Let me just pull it up, sorry. I haven't been on Strava for a while. I ran to do the gym, so still working on that. Starting to see some gains in the gym on Monday morning, then in the afternoon, ran out in the bush. So I changed the Monday loop to the bush loop. So I ran out through the forest, found the flattest loop we could. Still had climbed 191 metres in an hour. That's the flattest you get in Ballarat in the bush. Tuesday morning, did one of the worst sessions of my life, which was a nice, humbling experience. ran around Russell Square again, which is a dirt path around a couple of ovals, a bit of a hill involved. Ran, I think I did 7 by 2 minutes hard, 1 minute easy. And yeah, just that. I reckon if it was 7 by 1:45, it would have gone pretty well. But 7 by 2 minutes, I found myself really struggling that last sort of 30 seconds of each rep. And the jogs in between became shuffles. So yeah, not great. Did 20 minutes, averaged 3:30. A good little eye-opener, a little bit of a humbler. So it gives you a kick in the ass. Ran that afternoon home from work. Wednesday, we went early because it was going to be hot. So went, did the hill, well, it's Wednesday sort of hill loop. Ran with, there was a good group going. Started at 5:55, which is massive for me to get up that early. But it was worth it. Banter on the run was pretty good. Talked about Jack Davies. He actually, he ran a hill loop once in Ballarat and he was crying and walking up it the first time he ever did it. First time he left his junior training squad, come and ran with the boys, and he ended up having a shocker. Run club in the afternoon. Thursday, ran hill sprints 6 by 10 seconds, and then I did 8 by 30 seconds. Ran that with Dom Godfrey, our man from Steigen. He was in town. He's got family in Ballarat, so he joined me. It was nice to have someone to beat up on, feel good about yourself for a little bit. In the afternoon, ran home from work again. Friday was hot. It was real hot. So I ran to Radford in the morning, and then in the afternoon, caught up late. We had like late trading, but no one come in after we shut anyway. So I just went out for a run with Maddie Freeman and Collis, and we had a beer afterwards. Saturday morning, we did the Christmas tradition, which is in Ballarat, run up Buninyong. I did as a threshold, but these I didn't put a heart rate on. I reckon I was working pretty hard for most of it. You climb 355 meters in, no, sorry, that's the total. I think it'd be about 300 meters in 5K or so. So it's pretty good, pretty good hill, solid gradient the whole way. If you ever watch the National Cycling Champs, you go up the hill, they go up there, and then you add on, you actually run to the summit of the mountain, whereas those guys turn off it at about the, probably the two-thirds way up. Ran 22:45, which is about 35 seconds off my best, but I've never had a full crack up there. Skillsy, Nath, he owns that place. He runs that like with his eyes shut. He ran 21:57. Funny story, on the way down Watto, he was in the car with me. He said, I'm going to ruin Nath's run. I'm going to just sprint to the first corner, which is about 5 minutes away. And then he would just start jogging. But Nath, he can't let him do that because he just would never let Watto beat him. So he took it out real hard. Watto did, and then he jogged, and then Nath was left by himself running the fastest split he's ever run to the corner. Held on pretty well, though. He's a gutsy bastard. So, yeah, he ended up running 21:27, I think he said, something like that. Pretty good. Sunday, ran with – oh, yeah, we went to Steigen that night, ran with a pretty good group, pretty solid bunch on Sunday morning. A few blokes straight out of nightclubs, which was good to see. Good to see they still got there for the long run. Pretty hilly loop in Geelong. Took them over the Ring Road Mother Bitch, which is just a bit of a climb up next to a ring road. Down through Deakin, back over the Highton Hills. Ended up being 24K. Yeah, good banter on the run, except for you, Croker. Everyone else is pretty solid.
Doesn't mind beating up on people, does he, Brad? You, no, Skillsy, yeah. Jack Davies. Well, Watto, how many people did you beat up on that recap?
Hates it when anybody gets in front of him on the long run. The 2:14 big dog.
The worst. So you got to show a bit of respect.
You got to show respect. Just remember where you are in the pack.
I reckon it was a pretty shit loop, though. I felt really sorry for the people that had raced the night before. Yeah. Like,
no consideration.
They were expecting something nice and flat.
Were they?
Yeah, I reckon.
Who told them that?
Well, if you'd just raced a 10K the night before, you probably would be looking for a reasonably flat long run, wouldn't you?
No.
Okay.
How are you going to get fit running flat long runs, mate?
You know, I want to get fit the day after a 10K.
It's recovery.
That's why you never ran 214.
Very good. How many Ks you do?
142. Yeah.
It's back.
Doubled every weekday, singles on the weekend.
Yeah, very good. You got any races pinned? Next, like, you don't go down and do those ones down Geelong, the beach,
country, what are they champs
called? No, not the country champs. The, what are they called? Like the Bells Beach Bash or something
oh,
like that?
Oh, yeah, the Bells Bash, the Mount the Surf,
yeah,
the
Victor
River, the Roo Run, Dawn Busters. Nah, not after the fucking Geelong crew ran so fast last night. Not on last night on Steigen, they all ran out of their skin. Massive PBs. I'm a bit worried to go back down to those fun runs now. Same with the country champs. Fucking Jamie Cook's running 30.06 or something.
Yeah. What are you? 29.55.
Yeah.
Beast is coming
for
you. I'm not
about the country champs this year. Might be a bit sharp.
Used to be easy to win that one, eh?
Do you ever win it?
Skillsy got me in the 10K 1 year. Thank out you. Kicked me. Yeah, I won the 15 and 5K double 1 year, actually. You wouldn't hear of that these days, would you?
No, I think double. Huffer did that. Craig Huffer did that 2 years ago.
Did he? Yeah, that's rare. It would be a select number of athletes who have done that. Bradley down here, 15 and 5. It's like Ingebrigtsen kind of stuff, that.
Yeah, I don't know about that. We're talking country champs, aren't we? It's not nationals.
You know, it was in that race that year, Jared Clifford.
4:15 and
15:40. Ran 3:59 and like 15:10, I think. Yeah, shouldn't have told you that. Brad, what have you been doing?
I ran every day last week, cool. So that was good. And I had 4 of the 7 days where I actually ran with someone, which I can't actually remember the last time I ran with people on that many days of the week. So got out Monday for 7.2K. So I hadn't run. I tried to run the Friday before, everything was no good. I was getting treatment that day, so I got out for 7.2, got some treatment that day. Then Jess Pascoe, she's back from the US, so she's over at the University of Florida, past guest of the show. She messaged me saying that she was back here and was keen for a run, so we met out at Mulligan's. She likes clipping along on her easy runs just as much as I do. So we averaged 4:05s for about 10K out there. It's quite interesting. I wrote on my Strava, a gator sighting in Mulligan's explains the quick pace, and hence the fact that, so she runs at the University of Florida, their mascot is a gator, and there was a few people that commented, like, seriously, so they're quite gullible. I thought that was quite entertaining that people thought it was true.
Classic, mate.
That's right. Also, on Monday, after that we recorded, I wasn't sure whether I was even going to Steigen. At that point, I wasn't confirmed. But Tuesday morning, I decided I didn't want to miss it. So I booked the hire car before the run. So then I was pretty pumped for the rest of the week, knowing that I was heading down to Echuca and then to Geelong. Wednesday, I just ran by myself, 45 minutes at 4:17s. Mulligan's was flat, so I just did a loop from home. Ran with Jess again on Thursday morning. And that was just 45 minutes at 4:05. Pretty solid again. I was a bit too quick for her. We actually stopped for a couple of minutes because she said she was working too hard. And then Friday, I got up in the morning and it was super smoky. I ran for half an hour and my singlet smelled like I'd been camping for a week. I think the air quality index, so above 200 is hazardous, and it was 1400 here that morning. My Achilles was a bit stiff when I got out of bed and it didn't really loosen up during the day, so I was a bit concerned that I may not be running much on the weekend. So then I pretty much finished the run, picked up the hire car, drove 6 hours straight to your place, Brady. Got out of the, actually first stop was the bakery, Vanilla Slice. You can tell a lot about a country town by their vanilla slice. And then rocked up to your place. 46 degrees, wasn't it?
Yeah, hottest day in history, I think, close to it.
Yeah. Few beers in the pool.
Welcome to town. Yeah, a couple of beers, a couple of laps of the swimming pool. It was a good afternoon, wasn't it?
Well, it was good. And then Saturday morning, got up, ran pretty early because we knew it was going to be hot. I think it was 27 degrees when we started at 7:15. So you took me on a loop, I'm not sure whether this was planned, but the last 10 minutes was basically running the opposite direction of park run. Brady was getting plenty of high fives and congratulations on sub 30, so I reckon that might have been planned.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it, Brad? Good little country community town, everyone just acknowledging each other, good. Saying good morning and stuff like that. Yeah, a good loop, yeah. Though. You like that loop?
Yeah, I liked the first part of it, and then it sort of got a little bit a little bit boring.
Only but because you were running too fast and you were starting to pop.
4.18s. 4.18s, that was good.
Half a step in front of me the whole hour.
Yeah, and then we drove down to Geelong, went to Steigen, and then, did the loop with you boys on Sunday, and I actually felt pretty good on Sunday. So that's my longest run in about 3 weeks, so hour 45 at 4.21s. So, yeah, 84K for the week.
Yeah, he looked good. Skipping along, wasn't he, Moose? Won the battle up the last hill. He's a smooth mover, Brad, in person.
Did you hear the story that his mate told, Ben Liddy?
I was running with Ben for a while. He's a good bloke, isn't he? I didn't hear the story, though.
He is a good bloke. I wonder why he's friends with Croker.
Was it a story about him spewing?
No, this is better. So he was telling me, he goes, oh, I've got a good Croker story for you. He used to train in Centennial Park around the white picket fence. Have you heard of that?
Yeah. Run cruiser was in there.
Yeah, they used to do monofartleks in there.
We didn't do monofartlek around the white fence, but anyway, continue the story. The
story's got holes in it early.
Whatever. Anyway, he ran a fartlek one morning, a monofartlek, or afternoon, if you're going to find issue with that. But Ben said he'd run the best fartlek that he's run, and as he come through the 20-minute mark, double fist pumps in the air at the end of his training session based on how good he was going. Double fist pumping it.
I saw the fists go. They were pumping last night at the Melbourne Bowling Club, I'm telling you. He gets excited. Yeah. I like it.
Can you imagine doing that in a training session, double fist pumping at the end of your monofartlek?
Yeah, that story is not quite true, but anyway, carry on.
I don't know.
How was your week, Brady?
It's moving on quick. My week was good. I jogged 6K early on Monday morning, so I was coming off the back of Zatopek, so a bit sore through the hammies Monday. And then I did 10K easy on the grass Monday afternoon. We recorded Monday night, and I made the decision then that I wasn't going to do Steigen. I was confident the body was going to be right to get up for another 10K in the space of a week, but I just really wanted to enjoy the event and just, really kind of get involved with that hashtag one kind of component of it, considering we had a team there, and just mentally didn't want to have to do that preparation where you're really pedantic about what you're eating and sleeping and traveling and all that kind of stuff. So made the call not to do the 10K at Steigen. So my week kind of changed a bit. So an easy jog again on the Tuesday, which was 15K at 4.20 pace. On the Wednesday, I did a bit of a pickup run. So I did, I think it was 10K pretty easy. And then I did 4K at about 3.08 pace. And then had 2 minutes jogging, then did 4 by 150 meter strides pretty quick. So all up, that was kind of 19K at 3.57 pace. And that felt good to be moving a bit quicker again. Thursday, I just did an easy jog in the morning, 16K. We had 38 to 46 for like 3 or 4 days in a row. So I cut a couple of my double runs out. Got a few extra Ks in the morning, but I probably wasn't hitting overall mileage that I was meant to, but all good. Then Friday morning, went out and I had my workout that this one got added because originally I was planning to do Steigen, so this kind of replaced the Steigen 10K. And on the program, it said 4 by 10 minutes at 3.05K pace with 10 minutes kind of float between at 3.30K pace. And I was sitting on the foam roller Friday morning, and Carly asked me what workout I was doing, and I told her it was 2 by 10 minutes on, 10 minutes float, because that's usually a pretty special moose session, and kind of thought it was just a normal one until I was just about to leave. And I just, these days I don't really look too far ahead on my program, and I just confirm what I'm doing on the day or the night before. And I just checked it again, and then checked that it actually said 4 by 10 minutes, and in my head, I probably didn't click. I just thought, 4 by 10 minutes at half marathon pace with a generous float between isn't actually that big of a session. And then I got out of the car. We did started this at kind of 6 a.m. because it was going to be super hot and we wanted to get it done before the full sun was up. And Glenn McMillan, a local guy in town, and he came along and helped me on the bike to do a bit of pacemaking. And he made the observation that it's an hour and 20 workout, and that was like, all of a sudden it was getting a bit more serious. Anyway, he jumped on the bike, held the pace, handed me water, ended up doing the workout pretty close. I was pretty close to hitting those three or five averages with 10 minutes times four. All up, it was 24.4K and 3.17 average. And then after that, I kind of clicked that that was a massive workout, and that's probably like the biggest kind of workouts I do, kind of 25, 30K close to marathon pace before a marathon. And considering I was still, I think, 14 or 13 weeks out from Rotterdam, I just, yeah, thought that was big. And then a couple of people commented on my Strava thinking, oh, that's big for Moose this many weeks out. And then you told me later on in the day, Moose, that it should have been 2 by 10 minutes, not 4 by 10 minutes. So, yeah, I'm pretty fit.
Yeah.
For this stage of the build-up.
Fuck. I wonder if you could have done that if you didn't think that you were supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes that's good too, isn't it? Like you're thinking it's the right thing and how you spin sessions in your head and things like that. And it was still pretty, like, under control. I had the heart rate on and that was in the right spot. I'll just go down now and see what it averaged. Like, I averaged 163, which is thereabouts. Got hot late. It was probably like 23 when we started, and maybe got up to 24, 25, and yeah, got that done. But like hammies towards the end were starting to get a bit tight as well off the back of Zatopek, and then just chilled out on Saturday with Brad. We did that loop along the river and park run, and then yeah,
took me to the industrial estate.
No, that was in the afternoon, not on the run.
Took me for a drive around the industrial estate, yeah, commentating on every bend.
Should see Moose. They're making a servo out there now. I didn't even know it. We're driving out there. I'm like, Brad, this is a 2K corner right here, and this is where the dogs are. And then we went around a corner, and I'm like, they're building a servo. Couldn't believe it. It's going to be great for the industrial estate. Anyway, then we done that Sunday long run, and I felt all right in that. It was good just having company for a couple of days there. Glenn on the bike, Brad on Saturday. I got myself as eighth on the long run, I think I was, kind of mid-pack. So 24K, I think we did, which was good. Good to get some hills in. Pretty much every hill in Geelong, I think we went over. So, yeah, building some strength. 136K.
Oh, beer.
Did you? Yeah. My session was more impressive than yours, though.
Back on top, like I should be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Got to stay there now.
Yeah. See what happens in the next couple of weeks.
Brady, are you worried that your coach is concerned that you might take his marathon PB? That's why he's flogging you this far out from the marathon?
Yeah, I'm worried my coach has stitched me up here, Brad. I don't think this would happen to Pashley. Let's just leave it at that, eh?
You would have said, hey, there's something wrong with this workout.
Yeah, if it was Pashley, Moose would have been on the bike.
Yeah, handing drinks. Why are you still going? Nah, but that's it. He gets into me going, oh, you should have checked with me. But I've put full faith in you. And I said when I'm starting up, I want someone who can just write a program. I put it on the fridge. I'm not giving you feedback. I'm not questioning it. I'm 100% committed. I'm doing it. Hey?
Why wouldn't you give me feedback?
Yeah, I'll give you feedback afterwards. But I'm not going to, like, question you and go, oh, do you reckon this session's good? Or let's change this or that. Like, I'm putting trust in the Run Strong brand here, Moose.
Yeah, because remember week one, how many times he messaged you in the space of like 3 days about, yeah, should I do this, should I do that, should I do that?
That was your fault getting into him about that. Now he doesn't ask any questions.
It was one day about hills. How steep does the hill have to be for hill rep? That's all it was. And now I panicked. I can't ask a question again.
Yeah, you should have asked about that one. I mean, it was one digit that got wrong, but it's a big digit.
Yeah. It's worth 20 minutes.
It's worth more. Yeah. That's worth 40 minutes.
40 minutes it was worth.
But didn't you, wasn't it, was it meant to be two or was it meant to be three?
It was meant to be two.
Oh, okay. I thought you said it was meant to be three on Saturday. But,
yeah, no, that was to make him feel better that it was actually meant to be two.
Oh, okay. Yeah, then it is 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Let's thank some Patreon supporters, eh? Kick us off, Brad.
All right. My shout out this week's to Russell Dimitrenko from Williamstown, Victoria. He's got a couple of young fellas, which I noticed they were getting a photo with the Big Moose on Saturday night at Steigen. They're called Cooper and Max. Also owns a dog called Pebbles, plays grass hockey, likes doing a lap of the Williamstown Cemetery. Don't know whether that's taken after you, Moose, around seems like you do
around the old
cemetery loops. Has a 5K PB of 26:40, half marathon PB of 1:53, which was back in 2010. And he's a big supporter of Australian distance running and particularly the podcast. So thanks for your support, Russell, and also Cooper and Max.
Yeah. Legends. Moose, who you got?
I got Luke Frazetto. Luke's run 16:49, 34:19, and 75:57. He's also run 2:49 at Melbourne Marathon. So he could probably snip that a bit, I reckon. He ran that this year, works as an accountant. He watched the World Cup in Berlin in 2014. Probably not worth going to the World Cup in Doha this year, I don't reckon, Luke. He enjoys travel and enjoys gluten.
Do you know Brad's an accountant too, Moose?
No, he's not an accountant. He's a part-time teacher.
No, he's got an accountancy degree. I've learned so many things about Brad over the last 3 days. Should have written a list. Should have had my own segment tonight. 10 things we didn't know about Brad. He's an accountant. He's qualified. He's got a ticket.
We did talk a lot, didn't we?
Yeah. We had some good chats.
That doesn't mean he's an accountant.
No, I'm not
like... He went to uni. And
yeah, I went to uni. I'm not CPA qualified.
Yeah, but you got...
Yeah, why the hell are we paying for an accountant then for our business?
Not yet.
I know. Okay.
I'm going to thank Matt Stacey. He's from Carlton North. This could be wrong, Matt. So if it is, let me know because you're a bit hard to track down. You may have two kids. You ran 60 minutes at the Run for the Kids 15K back in 2010. Also an hour 27 at the Melbourne Marathon Half Marathon and 3:19 at the Gold Coast Marathon in 2010 as well. You may also like a bit of bike riding, some road cycling. So thank you, Matt, Russell, Luke, and all the legends on Patreon for their support. Let's get on to some runner news, boys. You want to go Steig and hashtag one first?
Yeah, sure.
Do you want me to, do we want to Skype in our captains first, or you want to, and then we'll talk about it, eh?
Yeah.
Do whatever you want, mate.
You're the boss.
You are the boss.
Yeah, just checking, guys. Just need some reassurance sometimes, eh?
I just log in at 7:30 on a Monday. I expect it to be happening.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about your work rate over the weekend coming up. Actually, when we talk about this stuff, let's get Whitney Sharp in here. I think it's calling her now. It's calling Whitney Sharp. Got some stats for me, Brad, about her performances.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty impressive. Pretty impressive for the frothers. Whitney.
Hello?
Hey, Whitney. Welcome to the Inside Running Podcast. Oh, she's at the pub, boys.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
That's better.
She's celebrating.
Yeah. We thought that may have been the case. Hey, thanks for joining us and thanks for representing the podcast so well on the weekend.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is a dream.
Yeah. You did say early last week, if we win, can we come on the podcast? So we thought we'd just we'd lock that one down.
Yeah.
Brad, tell us some stats about Whitney's performance on Saturday night.
Yeah, so Whitney collected 67 points for the team, which was the highest point scorer for our team. She finished third in the 3,000 metres, finished, where are we, second in the mile.
Yeah.
Fourth in the 800, and then third in the all-important 400. But I haven't run the numbers, but I reckon 67 points is probably the most points out of anybody on the women's side. Maybe
Linden
would have got me. Yeah.
You did score more points than the person that won the overall Steigen 1 individual title.
Sarah Billings.
I probably eased up a bit too much in that mile and the 800, to be honest. I'm glad that we won. Otherwise, I would have been regretting that.
I remember after the race where you finished second, you were a little bit disappointed that you got sort of pipped on the line.
Yeah, because I was just, I probably cruised in the last 10 metres. And then I was like, oh, damn, it's that balance of getting points but also being able to finish.
Yeah, and what were your expectations going in, like at the start of the night?
I knew it was going to be hard, and I knew the 800 was probably going to be the hardest, which I think it was. But I didn't really consider how many people were going to be in each race. That's what I hadn't really thought about, and I got just terrible starts in both races and was just completely swamped with all these people. It was the 800 and the 4 were hard, yeah.
The 3K looked pretty brutal though. Like you had 40 girls on the start line and then you did get boxed in pretty early, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I started on the inside and then yeah, then all the people from the outside obviously cut across, and I just wasn't really ready for it. And then I was like, oh no, I'm right at the back here, but it was okay. Managed to get through. I'll take some time to the first couple of laps to build my way through.
Had me scared out the back straight. I'm like, this is our superstar, number one pick on the night, and here she is boxed in and she's 30 deep on the rail inside. But anyway, you got out of there and you come third.
Yeah. So it was good. And then one of you was in the last 200 of that was like, switch off, switch off. So
yeah, that was me.
Certainly wasn't Moose.
Nah, points. We wanted points.
No, but she was 50 metres well, ahead of fourth place.
Someone told me to ease up, so I did.
Yeah, that was me. How, just give us an insight into, like, the 10 minutes in between. Like, did you find that difficult to, like, recover and then warm up again? Like, what was that like? Like, everyone's just walking around near each other, like, your competition as well, and, like, me and Julian and Brad and I are kind of trying to give you a bit of advice here and there. Like, what was that like for the actual athlete who had to then go toe the line again?
Yeah, it was sort of hard to know what to do, to be honest. I sort of sat down for a bit and then tried to jog around for a bit. And had like a bit of water and Gatorade. That's basically what I did each time. And I used my like sort of foam roller thing. The 10 minutes wasn't too bad for the first three, just before the four, I think, when your legs are still feeling it, that was hard.
Yeah.
But the other ones, yeah, it was okay. I felt like I was actually recovering okay.
And Whitney, I'd like to get your take on the team aspect of it, and I guess our team in particular. Like, so during the week, how many people on our team did you actually know, and what sort of vibe did you get from the team in the lead up and also on the night?
The only person that I knew in our team going in was Nath, because I train with him a bit. I've seen Esther around, like at, you know, AV stuff, but yeah, I didn't really know the others, but I thought like, yeah, the team vibe was like awesome in our group chat, and that's probably all thanks to you guys, to be honest, pumping us up on socials and giving us our race strategies, so that's probably, you guys have a lot to do with that, but yeah, the team was awesome, and I loved being part of a team, and I guess you don't really get to do it that much in running, but yeah, it was heaps of fun.
What do you got planned for the last weekend before Christmas next year? Whitney, keen to do it all again?
Yeah, for sure. It was a tough call this year, to be honest, because of the being on the same weekend as LB Thomas, and I was tossing up, you know, whether or not to go back there, because obviously I won it last year. And yeah, that was a hard call, but I just, yeah, thought Stagen looks like an awesome event, so I wanted to be part of it, so I decided to do it, but definitely be keen to do it all again.
Yeah. Moose, got any questions? Had a chance to talk to Whitney over the weekend?
Yeah, I think I gave her a singlet.
yeah, thanks for that. I love my singlet.
Yeah, singlets are good. What would you do next year? Different.
What would I do different next year?
Start a bit faster.
Yeah, I think I told all the guys there to start a bit faster so they don't get boxed in so much. I guess it really is that balance between if you're going to go for the individual or if you're going to go for the team, because like I probably wouldn't have not switched off as much in each race. But at the same time, I knew I'd prefer to keep the pace decent for, you know, the whole race than I would to finish with a sprint at the end. So it's just all about getting that balance right, I guess.
And as an athlete, Whitney, I've been thinking about it the last couple of days, and Brad and I discussed it big time coming home from Geelong. And like we thought in their first year, they did a really, really good job and nailed the majority of it. But as an athlete, what's one thing you'd change going into the second year next year?
I've discussed this with my coach, Nick, heaps as well, actually, because he had He was a coach of one of the other teams. And yeah, we were sort of discussing, you know, yeah, that heaps of the stuff was really great. But one thing I reckon they could do is alternate the women's then the men's, because I feel like that'd give it a bit more of like a teamy vibe, like with, and you wouldn't have the sort of gaps in between, but obviously that would make it heaps harder for the officials. So I don't know if it would be possible.
Yeah, yeah, I have heard that.
Good call, though.
And what's coming up next, Whitney? Like, you guys are just kind of kicking off your summer now. Like, what's the plan? Tokyo on the radar for the 1500?
It's the dream.
Yeah.
The goal. I'm going up to Falls in January. Got some time off work, so going there. And then I'll come back and I'm going to run the 5K at Melbourne. Melbourne track, so the 5K champ, like Australian champs, and then yeah, the focus will be, 1500s and a few fives in there as well.
Yeah, cool. Any other questions, boys, before we let Whitney go back to her Christmas party?
Oh, just one, Whitney. What did you think of Moose's Sunday loop for the long run?
Oh yeah.
I don't know if I'm sore from Steigen or from that Sunday run, to be honest.
So I take that as it was rubbish.
Yeah. Hey,
look ahead, Whitney. Tokyo. You gotta do that shit.
Well, I go up to Fernie on the weekends, but so I get my heels in there, but that was a hard run.
Yeah. No, you did well. You almost complained less than Croker.
I think I complained once, Moose. You're the one complaining about being dropped on the hill.
I don't think you would have heard me complain because I was too far back.
I got a hint of it at the end.
Awesome, Whitney.
No, it was good. It was good that you guys have, organised a run for everyone, so it's fun, or whoever organised it.
Yeah, I don't know how much organisation did go into that, but that's okay. Thanks thanks again for representing the team so well and, getting this the team win. Like, you obviously played, probably the biggest part in a way, getting the most points for the team, and we really appreciate the way you kind of were that team player and not so much just after that $5,000 at the end and, doing your bit for just us and all the listeners out there as well.
Yeah, thanks. Well, it's not that often that you get to race as a team, so I had heaps of fun and... thanks for you guys for pumping up the team so much as well.
Awesome, Whitney.
No worries, Whitney.
We'll let you Thank enjoy you. The rest of your night. See you later.
See ya.
Right.
See ya.
Bye.
McCaffey, guys, get him in.
Yeah.
All right. Lewis McCaffey, all the way from Queensland. Coming in now, boys. Get ready.
Hello.
Hey, Lewis. How you going?
Big Lou.
Yeah, good, guys. How you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. Good, thanks. Thanks for giving up some time on your Monday night to have a chat to us about the weekend.
Oh, no dramas.
And you got home safely?
Sure did. I was a bit rough Sunday morning, but got home.
Yeah, we saw it at the start of the long run, and then that was it.
No, I just wasn't interested in going Croker's 4-minute pace.
Come on, there's none of that. 4:20s.
No, you took us up that big hill, and I thought I'm done from here. So
Gold Coast is pretty flat, isn't it, mate?
Hills out there.
Very good. How'd you pull up?
Yeah, pretty good. My my shins and calves took a massive beating, but it's all good now.
Yeah, and what, like, you know, like 2 days on now, what did you think about the whole event in general?
I thought that was a massive step for running, I reckon, in Australia. I just think, like, the whole atmosphere around it, Steigen were awesome. I think not a lot of events, I don't know if you guys think the same, but not a lot of events have that, like, real athlete focus. And I think in doing that, they also promoted how good of a brand they are, and I think it just gelled really well.
Yeah, well said.
Give us some stats, Brad, about Louis' performance on the night. What did he do?
Yes, so Louis racked up 56 points for the team, which was second behind Whitney. He finished second in the 3K, which got us 39 points there. Let me just find the rest of the results. In the mile, he finished ninth, which then qualified him for the 800. And he went all out in that one. Like, we watched it back actually yesterday afternoon, and I reckon about 150 in, it looked like you were running a 400. And you finished six in that one, in a 159, which is pretty solid after you've already run those two other races. So I had a couple of questions because I don't know if you remember, I think it was after the mile, I came up to you straight afterwards going, good work, mate. And you're like, oh, I just want to start swinging out there. You seem pretty fired up. What was happening?
I think just like having that many people on the track and everyone fighting for positions got a bit physical. And I think it was about 600 to go. Someone slowed down, like put the brakes on really hard. And so I did as well. And someone on the inside just gave me a massive elbow and then took off, came back about 50 meters later, gave me another elbow. And that was like 400 to go. And then I was, as you saw in the 800, I do not have any wheels. So I was trying as hard as I could. And I think it just got the better of me in the end. Just pretty, I don't know if it was unnecessarily physical, but it's pretty fun. Like,
you weren't happy, that's for sure. I thought you were going to start swinging at me.
I wasn't at the time, but you know, that's racing, so that's fine.
So you said you don't have any wheels. So at the start of the night, how far did you think you would actually progress with the field that was there for Steigen?
I thought probably the 800, and I was going to have to dig really hard in that 8. I probably didn't realize how, like, I thought it would be, I thought people would be a lot more tired in the 800, but running that time, people weren't.
Yeah, we kind of spoke in that gap, didn't we, about it could be possibly slow and you and Jordan could go off the front. And then I was 200 metres in and it's like, that's not the plan, boys. Just race, hang on. They went out super fast.
But also there was some bigger, like it was meant to be 10 minutes break, and there was a few races there where it was definitely more than 10 minutes, which probably plays into the guys that have the wheels but don't have the aerobic capacity.
Yeah, and I don't really know how to, I mean, we were talking during the week about how to attack that the best, and I still have no answer for it, because even doing strides, it really, like, nothing helps. I reckon doing less and just walking around probably would fix it more than doing a couple of strides.
Hey, Louie, we just got off the air with Whitney, and I asked her if she could change one thing about the event, what would it be? Like, obviously pretty successful in their first year, but if you could make a tweak going forward for 2020, what would you change?
They're probably the finish line. That in the guys 3K, it was just too many people over the finish line, and I think it might have been someone might have made like a wrong call and someone got put in and then taken out. So that was why we had so much time. So I don't know how they could change that, but I'm sure with the technology that we got, something could change.
Yeah, timing chips or something like that.
Yeah.
Any other questions for the captain boys, the male captain of the team?
I've got one more, but you can go, Moose, if you've got any.
Yeah, Lou, what do you got next? What are you training for?
I'm going to go up to Falls Creek and then do National 5K in early Feb.
Same as Whitney, same plan, same pathway.
Yeah, I think she'll probably go a little bit better than me. She was awesome on Saturday.
You're pretty good as well, mate. Don't sell yourself short. My question was in terms of the team. So I think my proudest moment of the night was the men's 3K, seeing the three inside running podcast singlets in the top five for the majority of the race. It was like if I was a proud dad watching three sons go around. Like it was awesome to watch. And I noticed, because I was right on the inside of the track, that there was times where I'm pretty sure you were actually talking. Like, were you talking to either Jordan or Nath during that period? It seemed like there was a lot of teamwork going on at that point.
Yeah, there was. I was talking probably up until I made that move to the 12, I think we had control of the race, and like Jordo and I have both come from college background, so we just wanted to like, if we were on the front controlling it, I knew we could control it the whole way through and get as many points as we could.
Yeah, and when I saw you talking, like, I think that's what's so great about this event is that he's, like, I know you train with Jordan, but you don't train with Nathan. You're all there working together for, you know, a greater cause than yourself. And is that how you felt being part of the Inside Running podcast team?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the whole week was just, like, not overwhelming, but it's definitely, it hasn't been done before in Australia. And it was just awesome to have that, like, camaraderie throughout the whole, like, all of the states. And I think it's just going to get better and better as we get better as a country.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Cool work, mate. You enjoyed a couple of beers afterward as well?
Yeah. Jacko probably a little bit angry at me, maybe a little too many, so we'll have to quieten.
any ladies been sliding into your DMs?
Yeah, we said this weekend would be good for you.
no dice. So we'll see.
Yeah. Okay.
Even after those Tempo Journal picks, they made you look real good.
Yeah. I don't know how he does it. He's got a way, but anyone who can make me look good in a photo has been doing a pretty good job.
awesome, mate. Well, thanks again for representing our team so well. We kind of said to Whitney, like, you guys were, you know, here to do the team thing and not chase the individual stuff at the last race of the night, and that's probably why we were successful to win the team's component of it again. And we really, yeah, just appreciate that you guys ran your guts out and represented, like, not only Julian, Brad and I, but the whole kind of listeners out there as well. So it was awesome to see you go around.
Yeah, thanks again, guys, and thanks to the listeners for coming out. That was it was an awesome night.
Beautiful, mate.
Good on you, mate.
Might see you for Falls Creek. See you later.
All right.
See you, Louis.
See ya.
All right, boys. Let's. Have we said this? We've told the listeners we won. We won. We scored 294 points. Morton was second on 293 points, and Steam Packet was third on 292 points. So, super close. That's the difference between one person finishing one spot higher, because every spot you finish, that's 1 point you receive. Rightio, Brad, tell us more about the other team members in our Inside Running Podcast winning team.
Yeah, so during the week, we sort of did a bit of analysis and just looked at, all right, what's realistic for each of our runners to achieve on the night? Obviously not knowing, because it's the first year, we didn't know how many points would likely win it. And we actually wrote in some performance bonuses for each athlete based on what we thought was, I guess, a challenge for them, but also achievable to, you know, to get them to sort of push to that next level. So Whitney, who we've spoken to, we expected her to be our highest point scorer and actually get all the way through to the 400, which she did. And we also wanted her to obviously score really close to the top in all of the events. So basically, she did exactly what we expected. Esther, we expected her to get through to the 800. I think to win this event, I said that you need at least two runners from your males and your females to get through to the 800, preferably three through to the mile. So Esther was our, all right, you're the second ranked runner, you need to get through to the 800. She probably scored more, she scored 48 points, which was probably a few more than we thought, because she finished quite high up in the 3K and also in the mile. And then she actually had to pull out of the 800, but was still able to get 1 point because she made it through to the 8. Steph and Audrey, we wanted them to get as close to 30th or if not in the top 30 as they could. Steph ran out of a skin, she finished 23rd, so that was great. And Audrey came in, I think, like 36 or 37. So between the two of them, sort of evens out to where we thought they'd be. Looking at the guys, Louis was a bit like Whitney in that we wanted him to score like good points in the 3 and the mile. And as he said, he thought he'd get through to the 800, and that's what we expected. So he was pretty much on par. But Jordan and Nath were probably the two standouts for us. Jordan got through all the way through to the 8 and scored 37 out of 40 points in the 3K and 13 out of 20 in the mile. So he got to where we thought he would get to, but he scored a lot more points in the 3 and the mile. And Nath, he was we needed him to get through to the mile. That was the first thing. And early on, he was leading, and I was a bit concerned that he was maybe going to fade through the second half. But he ran awesome. He got 35 points there, and then 8 in the mile. So he was probably the big difference for our team in terms of what we thought he could achieve going in. And Pete, hometown hero, got 8 points for us, but he said that he passed someone down the home straight, which might have been the point that was the difference. So a good team effort, I reckon.
Good recap, Croker. And good team selection from you. You did most of the homework, got us the win, played a big role.
Good data analysis.
Good, loves it, loves a spreadsheet. That's always an accountant. Knows what's going on.
Nice to do this stuff at Swimming Australia a bit, like performance bonuses and a bit of modelling.
Do you want to maybe talk about that, where we're going to, because we did win the $3,000 for the winning team and the $1,000 for the winning coach. You want to maybe talk about what we're going to do with that?
Yeah, so as I just said before, we sent out a document to the athletes saying that, actually there was two components to it. One was, if you achieve this, we will pay you regardless of whether we win or not. Then there was certain conditions that if we won, we would then pay out on this, this and this. So, we're pretty much giving close to $2,500 away, or giving it back to the athletes, because that's what this podcast is all about, really, is promoting the sport. So, yeah, close to $2,500 out of the four that we get, $3,000 for the company and $1,000 for the coaches, will go to those athletes based on how they performed on the night. And we're making a donation with some of the other money, aren't we, boys?
Yeah, the New South Wales Royal Firefighters RFS, I'm not sure what that actually stands for, but yeah, there was a kind of really tragic story that two young families kind of lost their dads, Jeffrey Keaton and Andrew O'Dyer. They were tragically killed while on duty in the Greenwattle Creek fire just south of Sydney on Thursday. And, you know, there was two pictures floating around with both those guys with their young kids, and that kind of resonated with Brad and I a bit last night when we were drinking beers, and we decided to chip in kind of $500 to that fundraising effort there to go towards directly to those families as well. We know there's a lot of Australians on fire at the moment, and a lot of listeners are kind of impacted by that as well, and that was just a small kind of gesture that we could do with some of our prize money to kind of help people in need. Anything else on Steiger, boys? We've spoken a lot about the performance. Anything else about the event, Moose?
Well, we had a 10K on that night too. So, you know, the original event was a 10K, and it's still a very solid event.
It was, wasn't it?
It was won this year by Matthew Hudson from Run Crew in Sydney. He ran 29:32. And him and his mate, Tom DeCano, did the work up front, basically swapped it out. Tommy ended up finishing fourth, I think. Yeah, kicked in that last lap. Nick Earle didn't do a lick of work, come through in second, just edging Josh Maisie out 29:34.57 to 5:09. So, yeah, good on you, Matty, for out-kicking those boys and taking the win. But, geez, that race gets stronger every year, I think. I'm not sure what last place was this year, but it took, like, 31, sort of 20-ish potential to get into the event. And I know a lot of guys ran big PBs. It's a cool race.
And it wasn't a perfect night either. Like, there was still a bit of wind around at that hour, so that's some pretty solid performances there. And then...
Have we mentioned top three overall for the male and female in the Steigen hashtag one?
Yeah, you mean over the 400 at the end there. Jordan Williams, friend of the show, he got the win. He's got a brutal kick. He can turn into beast mode with 150 to go. Like, his arms just get moving. And, he was too strong over that last 400. He won the $5,000 as first over the line in the 400 metres. Cody Shanahan, he was next. He comes second. He just got Will Austin Cray on the line to take our second spot, and Will Austin Cray got that third spot. So those boys, I think they ran maybe 52 seconds for that last 400 after a 3K mile and 800 in their legs. And it was interesting because you didn't see that those guys did enough throughout the night that they had to kind of progress, and then absolutely lit it up in that last 400 metres. So interesting, you know, different ways different individuals go about getting to that later stage. And the girls, a bit of an upset, I thought. I kind of had Lyndon Hall pegged to win it, but Sarah Billings, Jordan Williams' partner, she actually won the 400. She's got that 400 metre speed and outkicked Lyndon Hall. And as we said, Whitney Sharp from the Inside Running Podcast team was third in that women's race in that final 400 metres. So, yeah, it's pretty cool to see him absolutely fang that last 400. And, and Sarah and Geordie were super impressive. Like, their last hundreds, they just blew both of them out of the water. Lyndon tried to come at Sarah, but just couldn't get up next to her.
Yeah, good race. And a lot on the line for those guys. $5,000, right? Or $4,000?
$5,000 for first and then $2,500 for second, yep.
There's a lot on the line there. Like, these guys don't earn a lot of money from running, so it's good. opportunity for them to come down and get a little Christmas bonus.
Mm.
And good on Steigen for putting that on. Like, we should mention that this isn't funded by AA or AV or anything like that. This is those guys putting their own money in for the love of the sport and supporting athletes. Mm. And I know Louis Rowan, like, he's always had this philosophy to give back to athletics and to make it something that it isn't. He's eternally frustrated with the sport and the administration behind the sport, and he's ready to take them on. Mm. And it has to be concepts like this that'll do it. And you can see the difference that innovation makes and how exciting it can be.
I was talking to Lachlan Rayner today, who does the live stream stuff, and he said the streaming numbers on this were 25% to 30% up on Vic Myler's club, and that's usually their higher stuff, and way higher than state championships. Kind of said it's nearly on the same tee as little athletic stuff, where you've got 800 kids competing and all these mums and dads and grandparents tuning in as well. So huge numbers there, and surely AA or AV got on the phone this morning, called Louie and said, hey, this is great stuff, what can we do to help next year? You'd like to think these guys can come together and pull something off in the future.
Mm. Like, as you said, Brady, the concept is awesome. Obviously, it's the first year they've done it, so there's a few teething issues. And I think Louie said at the end of the night that there would be a review with all the coaches just to see what worked, what could be improved. For me, one thing that was disappointing is sponsored athletes not wearing the same team kit as the rest of their team, because that's a large element of this event, is that times are irrelevant, but people that are watching at home know how well a team's doing based on, well, if the same uniforms are finishing high up, then they're going to do well. And, in the women's 3K, Morton finished first and second, but if you were at home, you wouldn't have known that because they looked completely different. So hopefully there's a way that they can sort of make that work next year.
Yeah, because you want the pros there. Definitely. Like, you don't want to, but then they've got things in their contracts, I suppose, that says you must race in Nike kit, not Steichen kit. So it's kind of a catch 22 in a way, and surely there's something they can do to sort that out. Get in black Nike kit if Morton's your sponsor and your kit's black.
They did have bibs on with their logo, but at home you wouldn't have known that.
Yeah.
And Steigen are putting up $45,000 or $46,000. They almost earn the right to have you wear their singlet there, especially if they're going to pay out that huge amount of money. Or at least just say, hey, look, I'll wear the singlet, but I'm going to put a bit of tape over the logo or something like that. Like, there's got to be a compromise there, I think.
Yeah,
I agree.
And the teams were also putting money to enter. So, you're Morton, you've paid to have a team, you've drafted Lyndon Hall, and then she's running a Nike logo and taking the Steigen money, and there's no Morton logo.
Put in the clause next year, I reckon.
Yeah. And as Louis said, I think next year they'll tighten up what happens at the finish line and making sure they can quickly sort of calculate the results and the points. So they'll definitely fix that one up for next year. But the atmosphere and the team spirit, even our team, from the Tuesday when we set up the Facebook chat to even last night when we found out that we won, I think every single person replied to our Facebook chat with a picture or a video of them having a drink, which is pretty cool that all these people didn't know each other sort of this time last week. So that's what the sport's about.
All right, next thing we're going to talk about is the Albie Thomas Mile up in Sydney. These guys were doing some innovative stuff as well. Looked a bit smoky when I first started watching some of the stream today, but once the sun went down, it didn't look too smoky at all, but it was super windy. The women's field, that was impressive. They lined them all up before the start. They went through their credentials. They kind of all waved to the crowd, then they sent them to the mile line to start off. Georgia Griffith got the win. It was super slow and just monster kick downs in the last lap. She kicked ahead and kind of won pretty convincingly in the end. She ran 4:36.29. Chloe Teague was second in 4:37. Jenny Blundell, huge return here, was third in 4:37 as well. And Jessica Hull, she kind of had control of the race, but then just got swamped in probably the last 150 metres and dropped back to fourth. So she probably would have been the overwhelming favourite leading in, and fourth was the best she got in the end with 3:37 also. So just over a second separated the first four. Super close. Any comments or views there, boys? You see it?
I saw it at the track. Whitney was live streaming it on a phone from outside our tent. So I did see actually that was the men's one I saw. Didn't see the women's one, but the fact that if Jessica Hull's coming fourth, then Aussie middle distance running's going pretty well.
Yeah, 100%. In the men's, there was an American that took it out. He was over here visiting his Princetown Tigers teammate, Ed Trippers, who lives in Sydney, and Ed told him he should have a go at this race. He did. He won it in 4:14, same thing, super slow, big kickdowns. Rory Hunter and James Hansen then tied for second. So because they were the first Australians across the line, they split the Australian title in 4:14.60. Callum Davies, you might recognise that name from Zadipec last week. Young fella from New South Wales. Actually, I don't think he is from New South Wales. I think he's from Queensland. That might be wrong there in the results. He wears the hat and the glasses, and he just goes about his business good. He just gets tactically there. He won the Zadipec 1500 the week before. He was the third Australian over the line. So pretty cool. Same thing, slow and kicked it down. And those guys had really good commentary and good special effects and splits up straight away. So it was that was good to watch as well for that kind of super Saturday in Australian distance running. So, yeah, hopefully next year they're on different days, though, because you put all those females we just talked about in that mile at Steigen and the Steigen field at Albie Thomas, and they're both going to be absolutely amazing meets. So that'd be good if they could, be all in the one spot and on separate dates next year. We are going to run out of time here, boys, so I'm going to can Moose on the loose. I think you had a shoe thing anyway this week, Moose. Could that go to next week?
Oh, mate, I had this rant. It was going to be amazing, but let's pull it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Let's not offend anyone.
I don't know if you still do rants these days. Listen to the question. That was a big one as well. We need to spend some more time on that. So let's go with what's coming up. We've got some inside running, limited edition, Steigen #1 singlets. Not many of them left, Moose. Got rid of most of them today.
Oh, yeah. No, that's what I've been doing all day, mate. The stock take of it. We got some good merch left. Not just the singlets are amazing quality and they look sick. Like, if you watched it on the stream, they are the best out there easily. Really good quality. They fit kind of small, so ladies, you'd wear an extra small, big unit like me. I'm a medium, just. And you boys are small, so that's how your sizing goes. Then there's a crop top for the ladies, only a few of those. But we've still got these really good blue short sleeve tops. Yeah, you want to get on them.
Got to move them. What else are you doing this week, Moose? Christmas, it's not celebrating.
Reluctantly going to Christmas, yeah. And I love this time for running. Because it gets me out of the social events. It'd be mid-afternoon, just getting bailed up by some uncle, and I'll go, sorry, mate, got to go for a run. Boom, away.
Oh, you love perfect people. Brad, what are you doing?
I'm repacking my bags in the morning and driving the long way to the coast. So a drive that's normally less than 2 hours is going to take 5 tomorrow to get down there for Christmas. So spent a few hours in the car this week.
Oh, yeah. What, 6 Friday, 3 Saturday, 3 Sunday, 6 Monday.
Yeah, and then another 5 or 6 tomorrow.
Yeah, very good. Drive safe. Tell us about this week's part one of this interview, Brad.
Yeah, so Yusuf Abdi, he is Australia's second fastest 3,000-metre steeplechaser of all time and finished 6th at the Beijing Olympics in the steeple. Grew up in Algeria, actually represented Algeria at the World Juniors in Sydney. And then his story is fascinating, the way that he makes his way back to Australia and misses out on a couple of Olympics. So I reckon that will probably cover the first half of his interview. So hopefully you enjoy it. It's the whole interview goes for 90 minutes and I was captivated the whole time. So hopefully, you guys are as well.
Probably one of the best, if not the best, I'd say, up there.
I haven't listened to it, but multiple people have told me, oh, you got to get Yusuf on for his story. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's been on Patreon for a couple of weeks, and we've had some really good feedback there as well. So, all good. All right, boys, see you next week. Be New Year? No, it won't. Be nearly New Year next year, first show of 2020.
What are you doing for Christmas?
Me? I'm going to be in a Moama on Christmas Eve. And then I'm going to Bendigo for Christmas Day. And then I'm going to Falls Creek on the 28th. So I'll be up there next week for the recording.
Taking the fam up?
Yeah, yep, we're all going up. Carly and Hudson, all going up, staying in an apartment. Carly's got family in like Myrtleford, so we'll do a day trip down there one day, go down to Bright for one day. She won't go real well being stuck on a mountain for 10 days, so we've got to find
boring some... Boring as fuck up there.
Don't tell her that, though. I've told her it's pretty cool. I'm like, it's relaxing.
No, you're an arsehole taking her up there.
No, it's a good, like, meditation kind of retreat. Just get out of the busyness of the world.
You're just going to fanboy the shit out of it, come back, and she's going to be like, this
you,
is fuck.
You've got me doing different stuff. Yeah. I'm trying to buy myself up there, Moose.
No, you should...
You may not be you married when you come yourself. Back, Brady.
Yeah, last 24 hours haven't been good, Brad. You've got me in a bit of trouble this last couple of hours. Yeah. He reckons he's moving to Miami, Moose. He's like, it's bloody beautiful down here. I'm going to move down here, sell up in Canberra, come down.
Yeah, Brady's house is like a resort.
Yeah. Good set. Yeah.
He doesn't even work as well. Must be that cheap rent up there.
Retired at 31. Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Anyway, boys, see you later.
See ya.
Just show love to everyone you meet. Doesn't matter if it don't come back. I'm the sugar of my skin. I'll burn all your names if it's all the same. I'll keep on walking.
This week's guest is a Commonwealth Games bronze medalist, and he became Australia's second fastest 3,000 metre steeplechaser of all time when he finished sixth at the 2000 Olympics. Welcome to the Inside Running Podcast, Yusuf Abdi.
Thank you for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, no, we really appreciate you giving up some time on this Wednesday morning. And like every guest that we have on, you know, running has obviously played a large part of their lives. But for you, it's probably played a more significant role because it's really changed the course of your life. Because after all, if it wasn't for running, you probably wouldn't be living in Australia.
Yeah, that's correct. Growing up, I mainly did football or soccer. So running was just by coincidence, basically. And the only reason I started running was I watched the 92 Olympics, and that's pretty much how I was inspired to start running.
Yeah, because you grew up in Algeria, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So born in Algeria. We moved to France when I was a kid, so I started my primary school in France. At that time, the only sport I did was just, you know, soccer or football at school. Mm. Just, you know, lunchtime, like every kid, I guess. I had one good soccer player in my class, Thierry Henry, who went on to become very successful, represented France, and he played for Arsenal.
Yep.
But then my parents decided that the life in Paris was too busy and too hectic, especially with my mom being a stay-home mom. Then they decided to go back to Algeria. So we all went back.
Yeah, and I believe that you sort of got into running largely as a result of your brother.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, as I said, we did a lot of football as kids, not in any organized fashion or anything like that. It was just, you know, kids when we have spare time at school, we play soccer, and same, we live in a tiny village, so the only activity is, you know, playing soccer. But I was quite fit because I remember, so if I take you back to France, the school was only probably a couple hundred 200 meters away from where we live. It was an easy walk. But then when we moved back to Algeria, the school was about 6Ks away.
Right.
And yeah, it was very different, not very enjoyable. Where our village was on top of a mountain, so to go to school, we had to walk 6Ks every morning. And then after school, obviously, we walk. I usually run because I wanted to get home early to watch cartoons.
Yep.
So that's pretty much what started my running, I guess. We only had one TV station back then in Algeria, so I had to make it home in time to watch cartoons. So that's pretty much where my fitness maybe started. But then my older brother Sam, or his full name is Samir, started running his school to represent the school for cross country, and he had some good results and had some good, you know, ability. So then he went on to represent school at the zone and region and state, and then they went to nationals. Eventually they even won a trip to, I think they were called the school cross country, world school cross country. I don't know if they still exist or not.
Yeah.
And he went to Portugal. So yeah, he was like a bit of a superstar
yeah.
in the village, and I was a bit jealous of his success, and everyone was talking about him, you know, this guy went to Portugal to run, and that's pretty much how I started running. I thought, I want to get out of this village as well.
Yeah.
So this is probably my ticket out.
And you obviously done a really good job of it. So you represented Algeria at the 1996 World Junior Championships, which were held in Sydney. Before we talk about that experience, what's the pathway like for Algeria or for kids in Algeria when it comes to athletics? Is it a popular sport, and is the system similar to Australia in that you compete for your school, but do they also have a strong club system?
Yeah, it's funny because I work for athletics now, so I often try to compare notes with you know, the way I grew up, but also with other countries as well. Football was and is always the number one sport in many countries in the world. And I guess athletics, or running mainly, comes second, just because I guess with countries like Algeria, they had a bit of a success in middle distance running. So there, a lot of kids do aspire to one day become, you know, the next Morsili or the next McLuthy or Bulmerka. So that's kind of almost cultural, I guess. For me, the reason I actually started running seriously, besides, you know, running with my brother and so on, I watched the 92 Olympics. And I remember watching Bulmerka winning the 1500 meters. I remember she was racing against the likes of Sonia O'Sullivan and also Morselli. And it was just massive news, and it was such an exciting period. And that's when a lot of kids wanted to one day go to the Olympics as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, as you know, not every kid gets to do that. It's very hard. But for me, that's pretty much where the dream started.
Yeah. But you've made a really good point there about the importance of having role models and having the sport as part of the culture to keep kids interested, which, as we know in Australia, running and athletics compared to your, you know, your AFLs and your NRLs is not really mainstream. So the juniors aren't really getting exposure to our top distance runners, really.
Yeah, it is correct. And it's very hard to compete. And I see it with other countries as well when they compare athletics to football. You know, there's you can't even compare the two sports. But yeah, we definitely need to find ways to keep the young kids in the sport, because it's such a beautiful sport. I mean, for me, it changed my life.
Yeah, so 1996, you come out to Sydney for the World Juniors, you compete in the 800 metres, and, you know, your teammate was Saeed Gurney, who was a bronze medalist at the 2000 Olympics. What was that experience like for you? I believe you basically fell in love with the country.
Yeah, it was. Before the World Juniors, I remember when I started running seriously, and my brother introduced me to his coach, and he said, listen, I think he's got some ability and he wants to run. Within 6 months, I made the national team for my age group. I think I was like 15. And we went to Spain to compete. And I remember back then they called them in French match d'athlétisme, which is like an athletics match. It's between three countries. And if we go the development, I guess, those trips overseas did help me. And maybe in Australia, when I compare the way I grew up, I know it's different. We're in a developed country here. Probably kids, I mean, even now, I guess, it is important for kids to travel overseas to have, to gain that international experience and also to be outside their comfort zone and try, you know, traveling to other countries, competing against other kids from other countries. So I think it's very important in the development of kids. So back to the story. Sorry. So we remember in 96, I actually made the team in the 1500 meters with Ali Saidi CF, who finished second at the 5K at the 2000 Olympics. And we arrived here, the Algerian team managers forgot to include my name in the 1500. Somehow there was a spot in the 800, and they just put me in the 800 meters. I remember racing the first round. This Japanese guy with a lap to go, he pushed me, and I went pretty much to line six, came back in. At the end, I finished fourth. We protested. He was disqualified. I moved to third, but it wasn't enough to progress to the final. They only take the first two.
Yeah, an interesting stat there. Australian Grant Cremo got the bronze medal. Did you chat to him during that championship?
I didn't know him back then. And obviously my you know, English was very limited.
Yeah.
What I do remember, though, few athletes from Spain, from Greece, from France that I competed against when we were doing all those athletics trips overseas. So that was kind of comforting and being in seeing familiar faces. And that's what I would like to mention with the development of athletics. The more we give exposure to athletes to compete interstate or overseas, that obviously they become more and more comfortable with the comp itself. So when they actually get to the biggest stage, such as the Olympics or Commonwealth Games or World Championships, it's not something foreign for them anymore. It's just a competition.
Yeah. Well said. And so at that point in time, did you ever think when you were running out at Homebush that Sydney would become your home?
No, not really. So what happened? So first round in the 800 out, which was a bit sad, I guess, because I was really motivated to make the final. However, my plans changed because I thought, well, I've got 2 weeks now and I'm not competing. So I started to go to the city. Back then we had a an accreditation that allowed us to travel for free. So I really visited Sydney, the city, pretty much every day, and I really loved it. And I started to kind of in my mind dream about, how about if I come back here one day? What is it like to live here? So I wasn't really planning on coming back, but I guess back of my mind, my subconscious was starting to have some kind of plans about having a life here.
Yeah, and so can you talk me then through maybe the next couple of years from when you left Australia to then coming back? So why you came back and I guess the process for you coming back?
Yeah, so when we went back to Algeria, I remember the Algerian Federation said, you guys are such a good team, which we were a good team, that generation of 96. And the next step was we were going to uni and to study something that is related to sport. And because we represented the country, we will have some special consideration to go to uni. Because we missed so much, you know, studies with going to camps and so on. Anyway, we all did the test like every student, and I remember I passed the test, and same as some of my plates, including Jabir Said Gurney. But then at the end, they only had two spots allocated for athletics. And they only took two athletes, and I wasn't included in that those two athletes. Therefore, we just have to go back to our homes, basically. Mm-hmm. And at that stage, I wasn't a kid anymore. I was a junior. It was a very important and crucial, period in any athlete's career. That's pretty much what determines which path you will follow. But unfortunately, where I lived, I didn't really have much. Even up to that point, I was just training on a dirt track. Situation in Algeria politically was very bad, and it wasn't safe to train. So I was very limited with my options, and then the only other option I had was it's compulsory to go to the army in Algeria. The good thing was if you are an athlete and you represented your country, you will go to a sporting base. But unfortunately, same thing. I wasn't lucky. When I received the papers to where we'll have to go, it was just a normal army base where you pretty much have to train and and fight the terrorists, and which is something I didn't want to do. Yeah. I wanted to run.
Yeah.
So I didn't have many options. I thought the only option was to leave the country. I could have gone to France, but I didn't have my papers, passport, visa ready because I had to act very quickly. And the only thing I had was a visa for Australia. When we came for the World Juniors, we had a one-year visa. So then I thought, well, I only have less than 48 hours to leave, and the only country I could go to was Australia. It was very far, obviously, and I had to get a lot of money to get the ticket. But my plan was to come to Australia and then eventually go to France. Yeah. But that didn't happen, so I ended up coming here, and then 20 plus years later, I'm still here.
Yeah, so what you arrived back here must have been, what, 97?
No, in 96. So I came here in August 96 for the World Juniors.
Yep.
And I came back in November 96. So it was quite quick.
Yeah. And your family, what were their sort of thoughts when you left Algeria?
Very uncomfortable, very sad when I left, when we got to the airport and I had to leave, because they, obviously, it's not around the corner, it's very far. We, at that stage, they didn't know anyone or heard of any Algerian person living in Australia. So it's just... was imaginable for them that they see their son living like that. I remember my mom was crying, my dad was crying. And it was hard, especially, you know, that uncertainty. I didn't have any contacts here. I didn't have anyone. I had to lie to them. I had to say, oh, listen, I know someone from World Juniors when I went there, blah, 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 and you know, they can help me. But I knew that, that wasn't true. So, but I had to keep a brave face when I left, But as soon as I got to the inside the plane, yeah, I was thinking, oh God, you know, well, where am I going now? And to make the matter worse, it was a 24-hour trip. So it's a torture just to get here and thinking, well, once I get here, where do I go? So in fact, staying inside the plane was actually good.
Yeah. And so what did you do when you first arrived? Because as you said, you didn't know anybody. So those first few weeks, where did you first go to?
Yeah, so when I arrived, I took a taxi to Darling Harbour. That's where we stayed when we came for the World Juniors, and we stayed at the Ibis or Novotel. So that was the only hotel I knew. So I just said, you know, take me there. I remember I had $700 in my pocket. That was the only amount I had. And because we didn't pay for accommodation when we came, we were part of a team. So I assume the government paid for all the expenses. So I didn't really know the costs. So when I arrived, I said, yeah, I think I will stay for a week. And then when she... When she told me the price, I think it was $150 or something like that. And that was back in 96.
Yeah.
And I almost, fell and fainted. And like, you know, it's not even enough yet to pay for my accommodation. And then I said, oh, listen, I think I changed my mind. I'm going to see a friend tomorrow. So I'll just stay the night.
Yeah. And so that's pretty much. And so who was the first contact that you had over here?
So after that, I woke up the next morning. I went to the city. I stayed in a hostel, and it was a much cheaper. I think it was like, I don't know, $12 or $15. I was able to buy, you know, time and try and, you know, work out where to go. Then I had a contact that a guy gave me in Algeria. I used to go to this gym back home, and I see this guy all the time. And, you know, when he knew that I was going to Australia, he said, oh, listen, I have a friend who lives there. I will give you his contact, and you can contact him. So I had that contact, but deep down I thought, I will never contact him.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I was stuck, after the hostel, I went, I actually spent a few nights at Bondi Beach just because I still didn't know what to do. And after that, I was really stuck, and I thought, you know what, I have to call this guy. So I called him, and he said, oh, I've been waiting for your call and this and that. And I kind of felt terrible thinking, well, I don't know the guy, you know?
Yeah.
But culturally for us, that's just what you do. If you, that's just certain cultures, I guess. That's just work. So anyway, he was very kind. He came and picked me up, and I stayed with him for, I think, a number of weeks, maybe 6 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, he looked after me, which is,
That's good, yeah. And so those early... So obviously you had a one-year visa. So what was the process for those next couple of years in terms of renewing the visas and supporting yourself?
Yeah, so after those 6 weeks, I moved out and went and stayed with another Algerian friend, if I can call him a friend, because I just met him here. And he said, listen, if you want to come and stay with me, it's fine. It will give this guy a bit of a break. So I did, and that was at Newtown. So my first stay was at Ross Bay, which was great because,
Nice area, yeah.
Exactly right. And then I went to Newtown, and I found a job at the Merrickfield Metro. It's a shopping center.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to get some money, and then I moved out and actually started to pay for my accommodation, like a share accommodation with an Australian guy. So then that I was able to look after myself. But in terms of visas, yeah, I had to renew the visa, and they gave me what they called back then a bridging visa. and I had to ask for asylum because Algeria was, as I said, politically it wasn't great, and I couldn't really go back. So at that stage, I couldn't go back.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much the process. And that was 96. By 2000, I gained citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it was March 2000, and I became pretty much an Aussie, an Australian.
Yeah, so we'll get to the 2000 Olympic trials shortly. So from a running point of view, when you first arrived here, who were your first, contacts from a running point of view and training partners?
I lost a fair bit of training because obviously I wasn't stable and I was trying to find, when I say stable in terms of, you know, accommodation and so on, didn't have much money. So therefore, the priority was more to get myself sorted in that sense. But I always try and do, you know, a half an hour if I can, or 40 minutes, or some kind of light session to keep me, you know, reasonably fit. And then I was searching for athletics tracks, and I was surprised I didn't have many.
That's very true. Yeah.
Yeah. When you go to the, you know, European countries, you know, every suburb has like three or four running tracks. So the first one that I could find was ES Marks.
Mm-hmm.
So I just didn't know what to do. The first thing that guy at the gate said to me, I had to pay for training, which was just strange for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm here to do sports. Why do you want me to pay? And, he explained that, you know, to use the facilities, you have to pay. And growing up, I never paid for practicing sport, you know, to go to an oval or you know, so that was just strange. So anyway, I had to pay, and I was going back there pretty much every Tuesdays and Thursdays, and slowly I was making friends. I remember this French guy, sprinter, was training there, and when he heard me talking, he could pick up on the accent, and he said, "Oh, you speak French?" So we started speaking in French. He pretty much helped me a lot during those few months.
Mm.
Yeah, his name is Patrice Le Paulmier. He's overseas now. He doesn't live here anymore, but his help in those early stages, it was just enormous for me.
Yeah, I reckon ES Marks was where we first met back in the early 2000s, I'd say, when you were, I remember you were doing some sessions. Well, actually, you seem to be doing a lot of sessions like on your own, but I think it was Mick Little was sort of holding the stopwatch for you.
Yeah. In fact, I think I met most of the athletes and now friends at ES Marks. It was a very good place to start, I guess. And Mick, yeah, he was, I think, the first coach who approached me because he just noticed that I was going there by myself. And then the nature of training I was doing, he could see, you know, I was more middle distance training, sprinting. And we established a relationship and we worked together for a few years.
Mm. So your running really started to take off, like probably after the 2000 Olympic trials. So we'll chat about post 2000 shortly, but I just want you to tell the listeners about the Sydney 2000 Olympic trials, because as you said, you became a citizen earlier that year, so you're eligible to compete for Australia at the Olympics. Now, it was quite a unique situation, that 1500 meter trial. Do you remember it?
Yeah, I do, because it scarred me. First, I remember you know, the Olympics. It's a dream for any kid or runner when they are kids and thinking, you know, when I grow up, I want to go to the Olympics. So then being here and eventually I got my running back on track, and I was, you know, working and training, or studying at the same time. But everything seems to go well for me, and I thought, wow, well, the Olympics are around the corner. They are in Sydney, so this is a perfect opportunity for me to compete at the Olympics, and I don't even need to travel to another country. And I remember I was working in a warehouse back then, John Caldor, cutting fabric. And then I said to them, listen, I will only work until, can't remember, April maybe or something like that, because I have to go overseas. I need to compete and try and make the Olympics. They almost met me at the beginning. But then eventually, they thought, oh, wow, this is great. And they were very supportive. So then even when I needed to go early to train, they were very accommodating. So I remember going to Europe to try and get the qualifier, and they had the stress fracture just before I left. And all the listeners out there, they, you know, I mean, the road is never an easy one. And injuries always seem to pop up at the wrong time. But anyway, I already booked my ticket, and I already told work that that's it, I'm leaving. And because I was only casual, that's it, I couldn't really go back. So anyway, I pressed on and went to Europe. Once I got there, I was seeing a physio, eventually got back to running and did a few races and won a few races, which was good. And ran a 3:39.7, which was just outside the Olympic qualifier. So came back here for the Olympic trials. And I remember we at Homebush, of course, and the race was, you couldn't really pick a winner because, you know, we had about four or five athletes who could win the race. But I was very confident, and I really believed that I could win. So anyway, 1500 hits, final, all the usual suspects were in the final. And just fast forward, so the 1500 we started, and the last 150 meters, I was sitting just behind Motra and Nick Haworth. And Nick Haworth was, I can't remember if he was leading or it's between him and Motram. And when Motram went past him, Nick somehow pushed him. And this is obviously while we were still moving, so now we are more around the last 50 or 40 meters. And at that speed, just a slight touch, you lose your balance. And that's what happened to Motram. He was right in front of me. He started losing his balance, and he was going down, and I could see that. So straight away, I had to think of a plan B, because this guy looks like he's not going to stay on his legs. He's going down. Somehow, I can't remember if I just jumped or went around him, and I finished second, and Nick Haworth finished first.
Yeah.
And then I think they were almost going to have a punch-up at the end. I remember it clearly.
Yeah.
And I remember athletes such as David Byrne and Clinton Makavicius. They were trying to keep them apart.
Yeah, so that was between, between obviously Motram and Haworth.
I didn't really care, to be honest, because I thought, well, I was thinking about my own faith, thinking, well, I finished second, but I know there was an incident. What does that mean? So I was trying to process all that while I was watching, oh, these guys look like they're going to have a fight. So anyway, then Mottram, I think back then was Nick Pido, was his manager. They protested when Nick Haworth was disqualified and that was declared the winner of the trials.
Yep.
So I was very happy. But then a few days later, I received a call saying, well, that 1500, we will need to do a rerun.
Yep.
And it was in Adelaide a week later. They had what they call an Oceania Championship, and they wanted to include the, just the 1500 from the Olympic trials a week earlier to go to Adelaide and rerun the race. So I thought, yeah, that's great. For me, it worked to my advantage because that 339.7, I'm still just outside the qualifier. Okay, so I said, all right, I'm very interested to go to Adelaide. However, I need a pacemaker because I'm in shape and I need to run a qualifier. These guys, they already had the qualifier, so they just need to win. So I said, for me, I need to win and run a qualifier. And, yep, they said yes. You always trust Athletics Australia. So when we got to Adelaide, just when I was warming up, I was asking who is the pacemaker, and they said there's no pacemaker. So it was kind of demoralizing because, as you know, in an event like the 1500 meters, it's really hard to run fast if you're not in a, you know, big race, or if you don't have a pacemaker. And in that case, I knew Nick Haworth and Craig Mottram. They don't care how slow the race. I just needed to win. But for me, I needed to win and run fast. And it was very windy. I tried to block it out and just run and race the best I could. I remember I won the race in a 3:43, maybe 44. Nick Haworth was behind me, and Mottram was 10th.
Yeah, Mottram was a fair way down. Yep.
Yeah. So then I knew, obviously, that's not good enough for me. But there was still hope because I was hearing other athletes that were giving them an extension to produce the time or the performance. I think one of the shot put or discus thrower in the newspaper that he had until such and such a date, and I thought, oh, maybe I could do the same. But all the doors were closed after that. I tried to ring Athletics Australia, and just never happened.
And so as it turned out, then Nick Haworth got selected, and Sean Crichton gave up his 5K spot for Mottram, and that was the 2000 Olympic team.
Yeah, it was very interesting, very hurtful, and as I said, it scarred me because I really didn't think Nick Haworth deserved that spot, but I wasn't a selector.
Yeah.
Now you can't go back and redo, you know, what happened. So that's it. You just have to move on.
But the positive out of that was, you know, the next 8 or so years, you produced some really great results for Australia and represented Australia at 2 Olympics. So let's sort of move on to maybe talking about your training as a 1500 meter runner during that period from 2000 through to, say, 2004. So in that period, you won the Commonwealth Games bronze medal in 2002, and you missed making the final at the 2003 World Championships by one spot. So what did a typical week look like for you during those sort of years?
Yeah, coming from a North African background, we didn't really believe much in a lot of mileage. And I was surprised when I arrived here. I see a lot of athletes whether, you know, 800 or 1500, but they still do a lot of mileage. So that was probably a point of difference. My sessions were more very specific, and were more a race practice pace. That's pretty much what I did during my training. So a typical week, if we start, let's say Monday, I will usually run in the morning like every athlete, I guess. But then that afternoon, I will do some 200 meters, not at full speed, but just, let's say, 90%. And then on a Tuesday, run in the morning, and in the afternoon, I will do something that is longer reps, such as 1Ks, 800 reps, 1600s. So sometimes I will do one of my favorite sessions, actually, 4 times 1K. But you need to go at a decent speed, you know, let's say 230 or something like that.
Yeah. And so, but you'd be having decent recoveries off that?
Yeah, I will have maybe 4 or 5 minutes recovery.
Yeah.
Or sometimes I will do something that's, you know, 1200, a K, 800, 600, 400. Yeah. So it is more, I guess, specific, but and you do allow a bit of recovery in order to actually do the next rep at a decent pace. Then on Wednesday will be just a run. Thursday will be more shorter stuff, and Saturday will be mainly like hills or fartlek or tempo run.
Yeah. And so when you say, you know, you, like Wednesday, for example, you just go out for a run, what would you get up to? You wouldn't do any more than an hour?
Like 55 minutes.
Yeah.
An hour would be max. I remember with my, when I was purely doing 15s, my long run would be no more than 70 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely...
Even the likes of, you know, when I was talking to Marcelli or even El Garouge, they don't really do longer runs. Mm. They do them shorter compared to, you know, your what you typically call long run, but it is moving at a decent speed.
Yeah, it's certainly a big difference, isn't it, between sort of the Algerian system and the Aussie system, because although the reps, you know, like a standard session for the Aussie system would be K reps, but they're off, you know, 60 seconds recovery, 90 seconds, but they're more, you know, they're more at your 5 and 10K pace, whereas you're running yours at, you know, close to 1500 meter pace, but with longer recoveries.
Yeah, exactly right. Mm. Yeah, when I started, you know, I joined another group for a session and they go straight away. And I thought, oh, guys, I didn't even catch my breath.
Yeah.
So that was a very kind of interesting change. But as I said, yeah, your typical North African training will be more race specific rather than mileage. Yeah. Even people like McLuffy, when I talked to him, because I trained with him in 2010 when I went to the Atlas Mountains, and I known him for a number of years. Same thing, it's more race specific and have decent recovery.
Yeah. We'll be right back.